Chapter 3
I was nearly asleep again when Nancy, the kitchen maid, rushed out, bumping into my chair. "I'm sorry, sir," she said, "but Rosanna's late for dinner again. She fainted again this morning and asked to go out for some air. She'll be at the Shivering Sand, no doubt." I had a kind of pity for Rosanna, so I decided to fetch her myself. 4 months before, in London, my lady had visited a home for women who had just been released from prison. She met Rosanna Spearman, who had been a thief, an extremely plain-looking girl with a deformed shoulder. The director recommended her, saying she deserved a second chance. A week later, she began as our second housemaid. Only my lady, Miss Rachel, and I knew about her past, and Rosanna was grateful for our trust in her. She was hard-working and polite, but the servants didn't like her silent, lonely ways. They thought she thought she was superior to them. Our house is near the sea, with beautiful walks in all directions. But a quarter of a mile away is an ugly, lonely little bay that has the most horrible quicksands. When the tide turns, something happens down under the surface. The whole face of the quicksand begins to tremble. No boat ever comes into that bay. Even the birds seem to avoid it. Yet it was Rosanna's favourite place. When I arrived, I saw her sitting in the grey coat she wore to hide her shoulder, looking out to sea. She was crying. I gave her my handkerchief, sat down beside her, and asked her what was wrong.
"It's my past, sir," she said, drying her eyes.
"You must forget all that," I said. She took my hand and squeezed it. "Why do you like this miserable place?" I asked.
"A strange kind of magic seems to pull me here," she replied. "Sometimes I think my grave is waiting for me here."
She put her hand on my shoulder.
"Dear Mr. Betteridge, I'm trying to deserve your trust, but sometimes I feel there's no future for me here."
She pointed at the quicksand.
"Look,"
she said. The tide was turning. The whole face of the sands was beginning to tremble.
"Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it terrible?" she cried. "Throw a stone in, sir. Watch the sand suck it down."
I heard a voice shout, "Betteridge!" Rosanna jumped up and looked towards the woods behind us. I was astonished by the sudden change in her. Her cheeks turned a beautiful red. Her whole being seemed to brighten with a kind of breathless surprise. I looked round and saw a handsome, beautifully dressed young gentleman coming out of the trees. His smile would have made even the quicksand smile. He sat down beside me, put his arm around me, and said, "Dear old Betteridge, I owe you a halfpenny." He looked up at Rosanna. Their eyes met, and her cheeks went an even deeper red. Seemingly confused, she turned and left us suddenly. It was very unlike her.
"She's an odd one," said Mr. Franklin. "Why on earth did she do that?"
I couldn't, then, offer any explanation for her behaviour. "Welcome back, Mr. Franklin," I said. He had changed, but he still had the same bright, straightforward look in his eyes. "I've a reason for coming earlier than expected," he said.
I've been followed by a dark-skinned man in London for the last few days. I took an early train to lose him. Tell me about those Indians who came today.
How on earth do you know about them? I asked.
I saw Penelope. My father will tell you all about the magicians, she said.
She's pretty better edge, and she says your edge is better than ever. His gay mood died away when I told him. Looking worried, he took a small packet from his pocket. It means this, he said. My wicked uncle's famous diamond. He left it to Rachel in his will. My father, who is managing his brother's affairs, gave it to me to bring here. The will states that it must be given to her on her birthday.
Your father is managing his affairs, I said. He hated him. So did my lady. She forbade him to ever enter her house again.
Let me explain. It became public knowledge that Colonel Herncastle had got possession of the Moonstone in dishonest circumstances. When he returned from India, he was avoided by everyone. For years he led a lonely life, never showing the diamond to anyone. It was said that he was afraid it would cost him his life. Almost 2 years ago, he came to my lady's house in London, on the night of Miss Rachel's birthday. I was told a gentleman wanted to see me. I left the party upstairs and met him in the hall. He was old, wasted, but looked as wild and wicked as ever. "Tell my sister," he said, "that I have come to wish my niece a happy birthday." I went upstairs with the message. Controlling her anger, my lady said coldly, "Tell Colonel Herncastle that Rachel is busy and that I do not wish to see him." When I told the colonel downstairs, his grey eyes settled on me and he laughed softly. "Thank you, Betteredge," he said. "Never mind. I shall remember my niece's birthday in the future." He left without another word, and the next I heard of him was that he had died 6 months ago. Mr. Franklin tapped the packet. "I have made some interesting discoveries at Mr. Bruff's office," he said. "An old family letter says that it was the object of an ancient holy curse, and also the object of a promise by three Hindu priests. If the colonel knew this, and he almost certainly did, was he deliberately trying to pass on the curse to the sister he hated by giving it to her innocent daughter?" I couldn't understand my own alarm. Who, in this age of progress, could believe that the peace of our English country house could be suddenly ruined by an Indian diamond with a Hindu curse on it? Mr. Franklin read my thoughts. "I noticed the man following me after I took the stone out of the bank." He looked around him suspiciously. "You must understand that the idea of chosen servants of an old Hindu superstition waiting for years for the opportunity to get back their holy stone is perfectly normal, in the Oriental way of thinking, that is. Their religion has given them a different idea of patience to ours. The colonel knew this and made clever arrangements to hide the stone during his lifetime." He lay down. "I don't want to alarm my aunt unnecessarily," he said, staring up at the sky. "Yet I feel she must be warned. If you were in my place, Betteredge, what would you do?" "Sir,"
I said. Today is May the 25th. The Colonel's will states that Miss Rachel must be given the diamond on her birthday, June the 21st. We have over 3 weeks to wait and see what happens. Time will tell us what to do. Until then, put the stone in the bank in Fritzinghall, our nearest town. Do it now, before the ladies return. He jumped up and pulled me to my feet. Betteredge, he said, you're worth your weight in gold. We returned to the house, and he left for Fritzinghall. I wondered whether I wasn't dreaming. The morning's events had put me in such a spin.